With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
It is time to go blitzing all around the Beltway as we kick off the third hour on Grant and Danny. The versatile and terrific Pete Medhurst in for Danny Ruye today. 12:45, we are giving away tickets to see the Nats and the Rockies. We are also going to rank the top duos in the NBA. But right now, let's get to the blitz. Chris Russell starts us off on the Skins. Our insider training camp is just over 1 week away. Slashy, wide receiver position. We're actually going to ask this question today as part of our 20 questions in 20-day series counting down to preseason game one. If one of the Redskins' wide receivers flourishes into stardom this year, who would it be?
Well, I think Trey Quinn is the easiest answer because I know he's going to be targeted a lot in still what I consider to be an inside-outside offense. I don't think that's going to change much. And because if you look at the two games he played when coming back for the first injury before he was injured again and shut down after the Dallas Thanksgiving game, Grant, not only did he have a touchdown, but I think he was targeted 12 total times and caught 11 passes, or maybe it's 11 targets and 10 catches, whatever. The number is a high volume number, in my opinion, for a guy who was Mr. Irrelevant in the last pick of the draft. He is going to be targeted often. The only question is whether he can stay on the field. If he can stay on the field for 14-ish games, I think he can easily have somewhere in the neighborhood of 70 catches.
Chris, I asked Les Carpenter the same question last hour. We know the quarterback storyline is going to dominate training camp. What's the second storyline that should dominate or at least get a lot of attention in training camp?
Well, I mean, for me, it has to be the whole Trent Williams and Brandon Scherff mess. And both, quite honestly, I think are going to be messy and very difficult for the Redskins to overcome and deal with. For different reasons. Maybe some in the same. Maybe it all comes down, Pete, to money. But Trent Williams, A, is he going to be there? Is he going to show up? Is he going to play at all? Is he going to hold out until a week before the Philadelphia season opener? What is the real issue? Is it money? Is it medical? Is it frustration with whatever he is going on in Trent Williams' mind? And then the Brandon Scherff situation, I mean, I think Brandon Scherff will be fine. He'll be there. I don't expect him to hold out in any sort of way, but he's going into the final year of his contract. And if you believe a couple of reports, including our own Aaron Hawksworth yesterday, they are far, far, far apart on terms of long-term contract extension. And that could work its way into a little bit of a soap opera over the course of the year, as the Redskins could be looking at eventually, and maybe not that far down the road, a year down the road, no Trent Williams and potentially no Brandon Scherff, if that's the way kind of the cookie crumbles.
Slashy, we saw Alex Smith got the external fixator off yesterday. That's a huge benchmark in his recovery.
Mm-hmm.
What are the chances he ever plays again?
Very, very, very minimal. I mean, at 35, it's going to take him, you know, at least another full football season, meaning this one, and then, you know, all of next offseason to return to football activities and hopefully be something close to what he was. And that is a long, long road ahead. And even if he is at that point, Grant, what is he, 36 or going on 36 or whatever it is? Of course he can play, but the question is, he can throw. Whether he'll be able to run around and do the type of things that he needs to do to play quarterback and trust himself mentally, physically, emotionally. He'll say all the right things, and maybe he can do it. I just don't know how it works. And quite honestly, I don't know how any team, the Redskins first and foremost, even though they're on the hook right now, for $20-ish million under the cap next year, I don't know how the Redskins could trust, hey, this guy is going to be fine. This guy is going to be great. This guy is going to be exactly what we need, even as a backup quarterback who is one snap away from playing. I just don't see it. Maybe he could come back at 37 with a different team. I don't know. I just don't see it ever being close to what Alex Smith was when the Redskins acquired him.
Chris, obviously on the defensive side, we know what's going on up front, but it appears as if, at least from what we saw in mini camps, you've got Quentin Dunbar close to, if not back to 100%, which seems kind of amazing almost based on the injury that he had. Plus, you have the addition of Landon Collins in that back end. We knew what's going on up front. We know John Bostic, a veteran, now fits in, obviously, with a Foster injury. But what are you looking for out of the back end of that defense with that back four? Certainly through the storylines of training camp.
Well, a couple of things that I think are going to stand out. Craig Hoffman and I talked about this last night. I think there's going to be better communication and better coverage concepts on the back end because Ray Horton, a 58-ish year old veteran head coach, former defensive coordinator, that's his specialty. Players have talked about that already. That was a problem under the previous position coach, and because Greg Minuski is somewhat limited and is more his specialization is more in the front seven and kind of attack and downhill. I think that'll be a pretty good marriage between the new coaching staff and the current players. Then on top of that, I think the thing that jumps out to me is like versatility, right? I've talked about this a bunch. You have Fabian Moreau who can play outside and inside. You have Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie who can play outside, inside, and potentially can play free safety. And he did a little bit of that with the Giants. You have you mentioned Landon Collins. You have different guys that are being worked into the mold. You have a guy like Adonis Alexander who was taken in the supplemental draft. Pete, he might not make the 53-man roster because he might be pushed off by a guy like Jimmy Moreland, a seventh-round pick out of JMU, who even though they don't play the same position, you might have to keep him. I think you have to keep him on your roster because he's such a ball hawk, and they lack that. So I think there's going to be a lot of good battles there, number one, for positioning. I think there's a lot of good versatility, and I look for much better communication and coverage concepts overall and more being on the same page than they were under Torian Gray and last year in general under Greg Minuski.
Thank you, Chris. Let's talk some baseball. Sam Forte covers the Nats for the Washington Post. Sam, get us up to speed on the rotation in this two-game series with the Orioles. Looks like the Nats are going to tap into a couple of minor leaguers.
Right, so today they're going with Austin Voth on the hill. Obviously, he's the most recent fifth starter, kind of been a little shaky against the Tigers and Royals, two pretty bad offenses, but you know, we'll see what he can do today. Tomorrow, it's still unofficial, but basically the Nationals have two options. They can either throw Steven Strasburg on normal rest, or they can bounce him back one day and start him in the opener against a pretty crucial divisional series against the Braves. Eric Fetty, fifth starter from earlier this year, was supposed to pitch last night in Class AA Harrisburg, and he did not. So he seems to be a candidate along with Joe Ross from Fresno, but Fetty did get scratched. So take that for what it's worth.
Sam, obviously over the weekend, you know, the bullpen had some fairly solid moments. We saw a great inning from Tanner Rainey on Sunday. And really for the first time this year, we saw back-to-back-to-back successes for Wander Suero. Some already saying a little bit of that influence from Fernando Rodney to help Sean Doolittle as a veteran presence in the back end of that bullpen. But the thoughts so far on what they have added in Rodney, not only from his ability to go day after day, which he's done on a couple of occasions, but now seemingly having a positive influence on some of those guys and helping them in the bullpen so far in his short time here.
And Dave Martinez was looking for the opposite of Trevor Rosenthal for one of the three pitchers he needs, you know, to get through the seventh, eighth, ninth, if Sean Doolittle's not available, which is a major concern because, you know, he's on track for the most appearances in his career. I think Fernando Rodney is that guy. I mean, he is incredibly unfazed by any moment. If you ask him if he, you know, what his thoughts were on entering a late game that's close, when he needs to pitch his best, he's confused by the question because he's like, yeah, that's just what I do. So I think, you know, and his stuff is definitely not Trevor Rosenthal's stuff, but he's been effective so far. I think his influence in the bullpen, not just in providing, you know, a mentor for Wander Suero, but also just the stability and kind of the regularity he gives Dave Martinez cannot be understated.
You mentioned the Braves. They are a major's best 40-17 over their last 57 games under Brian Snitker. I mean, you go back to May 10th against Arizona. They're the best in the sport, and the Nats have been incredible and aren't really gaining any ground. Obviously, they can't play at this pace, but they play the Nats seven times between now and the end of the month. Can the Nats catch them, do you think?
I think they can, and obviously lining up that rotation, giving yourself the best chance, hoping Max Scherzer comes back either Saturday or Sunday is a big part of that. But I think the importance of this series is crucial, because people talk about the Nationals, right, the franchise best 30-11 run they've been on. Since that Mets sweep, when the Nationals have become the team that they are today, or you know, at least appear to be as good as they are, they have only made up a game and a half in the standings against the Braves. So like you said, you know, they have seven games between now and the end of the month. They can actually make up, if they win three or four, they can make up more ground this weekend on the Braves than they have in the last 2 months combined. This is really important.
Sam, appreciate the visit. Enjoy Baltimore over the next couple of days.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
You bet. Sam Fortier of the Washington Post. He's covering the Nats and the O's starting tonight in Charm City at Camden Yards. First pitch is about 7 hours from right now. The trade deadline is 2 weeks away. We haven't talked much about the trade deadline on GND. What positions should the Nats target? And here's the more important question I want to pose to Nationals fans and take some calls on next. If it starts to look in 2 weeks like the Nats are not going to catch the Braves, let's say they're 9.5 back in the division, but they can get a wild card spot and make the playoffs, are you willing to trade an upper-level, high-end prospect like a Carter Kieboom or someone like that for someone who helps solidify the wild card over all of the teams chasing you? It's just a one-game playoff. You're only guaranteeing yourself 9 innings of postseason baseball. Are you giving up a guy who could be helping you for the next 5 or 6 years to get into a wild card game, not even guaranteeing yourself a division series? Think about that. We'll hit it next on The Fan.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
July is 16 days old. At the end of this month, final day of July, the Major League Baseball trade deadline will arrive. 4 p.m. deadline, last day of the month. There is no second deadline for non-waiver trades this year. So every business that you have on the trade market has to be finalized before the start of baseball in August. The Nats have worked their way into a position where they're going to buy and not sell, you would think. At worst, they'll stand pat and they won't do anything, but they're not giving up pieces. They're 2 games up in the wild card right now. 2. On the Cardinals and on the Phillies, tied for the second wild card spot. And they still do have a chance, Pete, to win the division, where they're 7.5 back of Atlanta and they still play the Braves 9 times the rest of the way. I think by the time we get to the deadline on the final day of the month and they've played the Braves 7 times, we're going to have a much better indication of what the division looks like in terms of whether or not they can win it. Because if they're 3 or 4 back and they've chopped a bunch of wood and the Braves got cold and they stayed hot, then the arrow's trending up on them as a division champion. If they're 9 back, 8 back, or still 7.5 off the pace with 2 months to go and they've got now a total of a couple games left against the Braves, you're probably not going to win the division. So we'll know by the end of this month whether or not it's wild card or bust for them, probably.
You're also going to know what chances look like against the top 2 teams in the National League, because you're playing the Dodgers in there for 3 games as well. So you're going to face the best team in the league, and you're going to face the second base team in the league. You're going to see how competitive you are against those 2 clubs. Now, no matter what, Grant, remember, in the playoffs, your pitching rotation gets shrunk, your bullpen is shaped a little bit differently, and when you have Scherzer, Strasburg, Corbin, you feel like you can go into any best-of-5 or best-of-7 series and do some damage and be competitive. But again, obviously, they fight history of teams gone by that have yet to do that. I understand that. But at the same time, the mission is to just get there. You win the 1 wild-card game, you stay in the playoffs.
Right, so therein lies the problem. You're not guaranteed the 5-game series those guys look good in.
All right, can you tell me?
A 9-inning, 1-game play-in as a wild card, it's a great thing. It's better to be a wild card playoff team than out. But
if you're not in it, you can't win it anyway. You can't win the world championship anyway.
That goes without saying. But here's my point. If you're Mike Rizzo, are you going to trade one of your best prospects who you would have control over for six seasons? Let's say Carter Kieboom, who you've already seen in the big leagues hit a couple home runs, just got called up again when Scherzer went to the injured list, played in 11 games earlier this year, and in AAA is hitting 300 with 14 homers. Luis Garcia, shortstop, who's played 87 games at Harrisburg this year, has had a down year but has finally started to get going at the plate, hitting about 270. A really beloved infielder who Mike Rizzo's got a man crush on. Mason Denneberg, a pitcher they just drafted, who is healthy, just started his season, first 12 innings, 13 strikeouts. Will Crow, and I'll kind of stop here with these four guys. Will Crow is in AAA now, just made his first start there, through six innings of six-hit ball with six strikeouts in his first outing in 3A. At the AA level, in 95 innings, he had 90 strikeouts and a 3.8 ERA this year. Those four prospects are the best four in the system right now. Are you going to give one of those guys up to help solidify a wild card? Because I would not.
Answer this question for me, though, Governor Rizzo.
Okay.
Are you signing both Anthony Rendon and Trey Turner long-term?
Well, that's the plan.
One of those guys doesn't have a position then, either Kieboom or Garcia. How are they going to get here if you're signing both of those guys long-term?
Well, possibly that's true, except that Kieboom could play left field. Kieboom could play first base. I think Juan Soto ends up at first base, and Kieboom moves out to left, something like that. And I'm not saying he would have to, but that's a possibility.
So on the surface, though, you're going
Kieboom's
to—
Kieboom's a second baseman.
You're going to, right, but then if you have Kieboom, Turner, Rendon, where's Garcia playing?
Well, he's not Major League ready until 2021, I don't think. So next
year—
But if
you have Turner and Rendon, probably 4 or 5 years at least with both of them.
Yeah. I don't have to worry about that now.
But again, that's what I'm just
saying.
You're
2 years away from Luis Garcia.
If you needed to move one of those, though, if you truly believe Kieboom's future is in the infield as well, then to me, that at least makes it plausible. If you were able to get a good piece, like a better than average piece, and you had to include Garcia, you could do it. Though the guy's fielding acumen is unbelievable.
It's incredible. I mean, he made an outrageous play at the Futures game in Nats Park last year, if you guys went, that you saw.
Saw one earlier this year as well, playing for Harrisburg.
The bat is better than he's hit this season. I'm keeping all four of those guys, unless you're bringing someone in who's controllable for multiple years. As an example, when they traded 2 years ago today for Sean Doolittle and Ryan Madsen, Madsen was under contract for a couple of years, and Doolittle was under contract. This is now his third season here, for several seasons beyond that time, and that's why they said, we'll give up our best pitching prospect, Jesus Luzardo, because we're not renting these guys. This is fixing our closing situation for years. This is fixing our setup situation for a couple of years in the case of Madsen. So if I'm giving up Garcia, I'm not going to say no if I'm getting 3 years of controllability for a lights-out late-inning reliever, back-of-the-rotation starter along the lines of an Anibal Sanchez type who fixes your fifth starter spot this year and next year. For a rental, which is what most teams are doing, Pete, is trading these guys for rentals. I'm not. Would you? Would you trade Garcia or Kieboom to rent a player to try to make the wild card this year?
If I was only going to get him for 3 months, probably not. I'm with you. I'd be selfish and want more coming back. But
remember, we had a lot of people call in. They wanted to trade a few years ago. These names, right now they're just names that I'm saying, and people are like, I don't care. That guy's a prospect. Or you do the terrible bit. That guy's a suspect. Well, we did this same conversation on this show 3 years ago, and the name I was saying was Juan Soto, and nobody cared about him then. You glad they didn't trade him? We did the same conversation last year when everyone wanted JT Realmuto, the catcher from the Marlins, and the name was Victor Robles. How do you feel about not trading him? So you can kind of roll your eyes listening at home as Pete and I banty about these names like Kieboom, because you saw him strike out a few times in an 11-game sample, or Luis Garcia because he's played 87 games above A-ball, or Mason Denneberg because he's at the rookie level. These are the pieces, the building blocks, the future of this organization. I'm not selling you a bill of goods on a bunch of the guys in their system. I think their system is down from where it's been in a big way. And that is why, Pete, I'm more confident than ever that I can't give up Kieboom, Garcia, Denneberg, or Crow.
But you know what, though? I also feel very confidently, at least watching what has occurred, even just in the short sample size after the break, I am convinced that this group as it stands right now is good enough to hold most of these other clubs in the wild card chase at bay. So I think they can get to the wild card spot, barring any, obviously, any injuries. Max has to come back and be able to pitch the rest of the season when he does come off the IL. All that, if you give me all that, I think this group as it's constituted is good enough to at least hold everybody off on the wild card. My only question at that point would be, is it good enough to beat the Braves or Dodgers in a series once you hopefully win that wild card game and then get into a series, obviously, against those types of clubs?
Probably not. And they're not good enough maybe to catch Atlanta. You've got to be 8 games better than them the rest of the way just with this group, because as hot as they've been, as good as they've been, you have to think they're going to cool off. You can't play the caliber of baseball like 115
win pace.
But
if I can go Scherzer, Strasburg, Corbin against them in a playoff series with a lack of playoff experience with a lot of the younger players for the Braves, you don't think the Nats would take their chances?
Of course they would.
With those three guys?
Definitely they would. Just like they did against the Dodgers and the Giants and the Cubs and the Cardinals. I'm not telling you they'd lose by any means. I'm just referencing it's a toss-up. That you go into the series with better starting pitching, cool. 1-3, you're better, that's great. You still need timely hits that they haven't gotten. You still need Soto to put you on his back or Rendon to have a huge series. But the Braves are a plus 68 in run margin and have 9 more wins than the Nationals. The Nats are a plus 33 with 9 fewer wins. Right now, Atlanta's just a better team. They've got one of the best lineups in the National League start to finish this year. Since the Nats have gotten healthy, I'll take their lineup with anybody in the NL, including Atlanta. But the addition of Austin Riley has been huge. I'm not sure if they can catch the Braves. I'll know at the end of this month if they can. If they can, they win 4 out of 7, they give themselves a shot. They win 5 out of 7 against Atlanta before the end of the month, I really think they'd be in a good spot. Here's my question to you real quick. 800-636-1067 is the number. Actually, I'll get your answer as soon as we return here. And I want to get some calls on this too. Could they trade Michael Taylor for anything, do you think?
Straight up.
Could you get anything back for Michael Taylor that would help you in a playoff run? 800-636-1067. What positions would you target if you're Mike Rizzo to upgrade? And are you willing to trade one of the best players in your minor league system to rent a guy the rest of this year to help you try to solidify a wild card spot? Because you're guaranteed nothing with a lot of baseball left. Grant and Danny with Pete Medhurst hanging out on the Fan.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Grant and Danny. Pete's in for Danny. Hadid Carpet Cleaning listener lines are open. 800-636-1067. Is the number. That's 800-636-1067. We're talking about the Nats. The trade deadline is 2 weeks away. They are, as of right now, the team that would host the wild card game. So you'd be going to Nats Park to watch them play the Cardinals or the Phillies.
Yeah.
Winner moves on to take on the Dodgers in the National League Division Series.
Good luck.
Just thinking about October baseball gets me pumped, though. The question we've posed to you is, would you trade one of your best prospects if you're Mike Rizzo? And there's only 4 guys in the system that I view as kind of, they don't even have the blue chippers that they once did. Keboom's got a chance to be a star at the big league level. And I think Garcia does as well. Then you got a couple of arms that are pretty good in Denneberg and Crow. Would you trade one of them to bring back a piece that actually impacts the race? And my answer is only if that guy's around beyond this coming season. If you get a year and a half or 2.5 years out of that guy, then it's a conversation. I'm not doing that for a rental. But I brought this up at the end of the segment. Want to hear what you guys think. 800-636-1067. What about some of the guys that have been in the big leagues that we've seen a lot of that are back in the minors? Guys like Joe Ross, Eric Fetty, and Michael Taylor. Would you consider trading them? Because that's your organizational pitching depth. Right now, Joe Ross looks like a broken, battered, bruised piece. But in April of next year, after a revamped offseason, fully removed from his TJ, is he better off? Fetty, another year removed from injury, another year with some big league experience. Kind of showed more this year than he did last year. Those are the types of guys I'd consider trading right now, though.
Yeah, and look, everybody's always in search of pitching, so there is an opportunity. There is an opportunity out there. Somebody may want to take Joe Ross off your hands and feel like, hey, we can give him a, you know, we can do something with him. Maybe we can revamp him, give him a different role, so to speak. So from that standpoint, I would move him. I wouldn't be afraid to move him. At this point, I told you during the break, I watched Michael Taylor take batting practice in Cincinnati, and I watched him hit three of the farthest home runs I've ever seen come off somebody's bat. And then in a game, for whatever reason, contact just has eluded him at the major league level so much that he's not even giving you productive outs because he's just trying so hard to make contact to put something in play. The thing about it is, analytically, and when you look at scouting reports, A-plus defender. Somebody may give you something. He's still young, still an A-plus defender. Somebody might be willing to give you a reasonable piece here if you include Michael Taylor and, say, maybe even if you can get somebody to take a McGowan, all the different arms we've seen come through that five spot, maybe Voth. Perhaps Voth has auditioned enough where somebody may like him a little bit. Some scout may like him. They may want to take somebody like that off your hands. I think there's so many different things that Mike Rizzo is trying to package and put together. The only question is it takes one person. It only takes one person to like what you're selling. Go to any flea market. Go to any yard sale on the weekend. Your junk could be somebody's treasure. And if somebody likes your guy, you might be able to make a deal.
I wonder if there's a guy that I like a little bit from the Detroit Tigers named Matthew Boyd.
Left-hander?
Who's going to be available at the trade deadline here. And he's not great by any means. He's kind of a fourth starter type. He'd be the fifth starter here in Washington. But I wonder if the Tigers, he's under control through 2023, a real rebuilding team. If like Michael Taylor and a mid-level minor league player would be enough to get a pitcher like Boyd. You get an immediate major leaguer who can play every day in your outfield and be brilliant defensively and has the, we've seen it. He was the best player on the Nats in a division series against the Cubs. He was great. He has the tools to be a good player. Probably not enough to do that deal. I mean, again, I'm not in the market really. I'm not loving like Madison Bumgarner or someone like that. And I don't think that what I'm willing to give up, the 4A Nationals, so to speak, that have been back and forth, I don't think that gets it done anyway. So I think you got to get creative and look for maybe a little bit younger back of the rotation starter with some control.
Michael Taylor, Ben Bramer for Boyd.
I would do that, but I'm not sure that the Tigers would do that. And it's not like Boyd fetches you a ton back, so maybe it's close. But don't you want a higher-end prospect? If you trade Boyd, I'd like to think you could get a future major league long-term contributor. Let's go to Anthony in Fairfax. Anthony, how are you?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
I'm with you, Grant. I think if you're going to trade Key Boom or somebody like that, you got to get back somebody like Brad Hand or Vasquez from Pittsburgh, somebody you can control beyond this year.
Yeah.
I think Key Boom's cachet is still there, so maybe you can get a bigger piece for him. And as for Michael Taylor, unless Dusty is managing in the big leagues again, I don't think you're going to find a taker for him because he just looks broken, and every at-bat he looks broken, and I don't think anybody's going to want to even take a flyer on him.
Appreciate the call. What he's got as a power-speed combination, I just think is going to intrigue somebody still. He hasn't played in a couple of years. I mean, it's really hard to look good with the length of his swing and the timing mechanisms he's got when you don't play. I think that's a big part of it. It's not a coincidence. The year that Dusty just rode him is when he really got rolling. He mentioned Brad Hand. That's intriguing to me. He's one of the best relievers available. He was an all-star, just pitched in the all-star game.
Under control through 21.
Yep. He's under contract with the Indians. $7.5 million this year and then $10 million on a team option with a buyout in 2021. Two more years of Brad Hand after this year. And you look at some of the numbers for him, a guy who has a 2.2 ERA and his FIPs better than his earned run average, 40 games finished leads the American League, 25 saves leads the American League, three all-star appearances in the last three seasons. I would absolutely trade. We said earlier, would you give up one of these guys? I would give up one of your big four for a guy like Brad Hand, probably.
And I think Cleveland is an intriguing team because they got beaten by Minnesota 2-3 over the weekend, so they actually lost ground in that race coming right out of the All-Star break, but still very much alive in the wild card chase. But do they truly believe that they're there? Because they still seem hell-bent on getting a ton for Trevor Bauer, and they could get a ton for Hand, where It may cost you this season, but it certainly fortifies you going forward for the next few years within a division that has been yours for the most part over the last couple of years. You've just fallen victim to a Minnesota team that came out of the gates this year under Rocco Baldelli and played out of its mind.
I wouldn't give up all four of those guys, you know, any one of them, in other words, for hand. But like Keyboom, no. I think Keyboom's got a chance to be really, really good. I'd probably do the other three for Brad Hand. Let's go to Devin in Richmond on Grant and Danny. What's up, Devin?
Hey, guys. Just curious about Seth Romero. I mean, we took him in the first round a couple of years ago. Where is he at? Is he worth moving, or what's going on with him, you know?
Yeah, Seth Romero didn't pitch in the minor leagues much at all since he's been drafted. He has not pitched this year. Last time we saw him, he was in Hagerstown in 2018. He pitched seven times, 25 innings, and had pretty good numbers, 34 strikeouts. But he has not pitched this season for the Nationals in the minor leagues. So, I mean, at this point, you
Tommy
can't
John
move
guy
him.
Too, yeah. So, you know.
It's injury history, some red flags off the field. He's not a guy that is going to net you anything. Andrew in Falls Church, how's it going?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. How are you?
Good.
Good. So what I would say is we could trade Michael A. Taylor. We can trade Fetty. I think Fetty would be a decent trade to somebody because we've used him as a reliever. We've tried to use him as a starting pitcher both this year and last year. He's not the greatest, but he'll work for somebody. And if we still need to send somebody off, I mean, maybe start looking at some of the guys that might not be doing the best for us as relievers, like McGowan, or, you know, don't send any of our top prospects. Don't send Keyboom. We're going to need him in a few years, if not next year. But I think we can get somebody, at least for Fetty and Taylor.
I think so. You got to give to get, though. Nobody, no disrespect to this guy. I'm not trying to be rude. Nobody wants McGowan. I mean, if they might take him, but they're not giving you anything
no,
for
he's
him.
He's a 4A guy.
The thing to remember, though, too, here is, and Pete, you said this, I think, pretty well earlier.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bunch of guys, the ilk that I'm talking about, that are cut from this cloth. I'm going Michael Taylor, Joe Ross, Eric Fetty, you know, even Voth, a little lesser extent, McGowan, that there's a purpose for them in the major leagues on bad teams. Like, those guys would all be everyday players or rotational pieces. As an example, for tonight's opponent, the Baltimore Orioles. On a bad team, a second division roster, those guys all play every day. So there's value if you move some of them. Joe Ross could be a third starter somewhere and develop into something still. He was a first-round pick. Eric Fetty was a first-round pick. If I'm a bad team, I'm trading for guys like that that have fizzled out, where the Nats are desperate. They got to kick this door down. Scherzer's getting older. Max is getting older. Rendon's a pending free agent. I don't have time to wait. So that's where those teams that do have time can make that
call. At least there's some
big
league experience from some of them as well. They've at least gotten a taste of the big leagues, so they're not going to be overwhelmed when they come over and maybe pitch in a regular role for you. And to their credit, they've not pitched in regular roles, so it's been very difficult for them to stand out when they have gotten opportunities.
Let's rank some of the best duos in basketball with the dust finally having settled, at least for now, in the NBA offseason. We'll do it next. We've also got Nats tickets to give away at the start of the segment right here on Grant and Danny.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We told you we'd give away tickets, so let's do it right now. Top of the segment. Caller number 10, 800-636-1067. You're winning two tickets. You're going to see the Nats take on the Rockies July 25th at Nats Park. 106.7 The Fan and PenFed Credit Union are taking you out to the ballgame all season long. Courtesy of PenFed Credit Union. Details at thefandc.com/contests. You guys can listen every day at 12:45 for your chance at a couple of Nationals.
You
tickets.
Do that well. You get great reaction from your paper crumble. I like it.
We try. It's not always easy to do. It's a fun thing to do. Best duo in the NBA right now. I think there's a big four. Is that fair, or would you go deeper than that?
Big four of duos?
Yes.
I mean, you know, we're going to put Terry Rozier and Miles Bridges in that conversation. I'm just kidding, of course, saying that sarcastically. Look, the two LA duos, obviously great. The Houston duo, fantastic. Golden State's is broken right now because of Klay Thompson. Brooklyn's is broken because of Kevin Durant's injury for next season. So,
but I would still put them in the big four.
I think you could go five. That's five duos right there. So I think you could go five. There's a big five.
Would you, I guess if we're going new duo, so to speak, but like to me, Lillard and McCollum are in the conversation still too in Portland.
Yep.
My number one seed right now is Kawhi and Paul George with the Clippers. My number two seed is Harden and Russell Westbrook. And then I give the bronze medal to a group that I think most people probably are giving the gold medal, and that's LeBron and Anthony Davis. Where are you at on that as my one, two, and three so far?
If LeBron and AD are healthy, I think it's them. But
at LeBron's age, better than Kawhi and PG?
Doesn't matter. I think a motivated LeBron is still able to affect games greatly. Last year, you got a LeBron that had no idea what the hell was going on around him. And the fact that you've got AD, it makes Kyle Kuzma better. And I think that's going to make LeBron better. He's going to be more engaged with the roster that he has going into the season. So I still think that, and again, Davis has to be healthy. He's got to be able to give me 77, 78 games. He can't give me 59 or 60. So if Davis is healthy and I've got an engaged LeBron, I still think that duo in terms of individual play, whether it translates to team success, still remains to be seen. But if I'm going for just one season, I still think that LeBron and Anthony Davis can be a dominant duo on a one-season basis.
So I love LeBron and AD, don't get me wrong. But LeBron James is 34 years old. And even at full health, and I get the last year he averaged 27 points, 9 boards, and 8 assists. He's still incredible. Shot over 50% from the floor.
Playing with nobody.
Nobody. He had a 7.2 win share season playing 55 games. Now, you extrapolate that out over 82, you know, I think the number changes. But again, his win share was about 7. Paul George by himself last year was 11.9. If you're comping just him to LeBron James.
Playing with Russell Westbrook, and obviously they won more games.
Right, Kawhi Leonard was
a
10-win player. So are you saying number one is James and Davis?
I think it is based on the factors I gave you, because I'm going to get an engaged LeBron where LeBron was not engaged last year, and Anthony Davis is going to make LeBron's effectiveness better. And as long as Anthony's healthy and gives me 78 games out of the 82, I'm fine if he sits 4 or 5. But if I get him healthy, then I think those two can put up big numbers, and that will translate to more win success for the Lakers.
I think we started to see some cracks in the foundation on James last year. And maybe I'll be wrong at the end of the year. He'll be reinvigorated, to your point, playing competitive basketball again with the superstar next to him. Anthony Davis is obviously special. He'll average somewhere around 28 points and 13 or 14 boards this year. I mean, he's one of the great unicorns ever. As a guy who's going to lead the league in blocks in the next season or two for the fourth time. I'm going to go with the other LA tandem, one. And I'm going to go Kawhi and PG. Now, you don't have Harden and Westbrook second then, or you have Kawhi and Paul George second?
I think there are big chemistry issues. I'll go with Kawhi and Paul George second. I think there are huge chemistry issues here for Harden and Westbrook and how they determine who's dominating the ball. Russell loves to dominate the ball. Well, Harden takes it for 16 seconds of every 24-second shot clock for the Houston Rockets. So how are those two going to coexist here?
They did before.
That was when they were younger players. They had Kevin Durant as part of that puzzle as well.
It didn't make it easier,
did it?
Different
time. At that time, you're talking about
just
two
one
players.
More guy
but you're talking
eat.
About you're talking about two players that were still finding themselves in terms of their games. Both players now have developed as on-ball guys. I have to have the ball.
True.
So that's going to be part of the issue here early in the season to watch between Harden and Westbrook. Again, both of them are good to translate to team success overall for Houston, but in terms of the duo, it's going to be fascinating to see the amount of shots that each guy gets and the turnover numbers for each guy. And if the turnover numbers remain potentially high for both guys, that translates to not team success in what is a crowded Western Conference.
Russell Westbrook averaged 20 shots a game last year. In case you're curious, James Harden averaged about 25 per game. I definitely have my concerns
about
that.
When's Russ going to have the ball? Because as soon as you give it to Harden, the ball stops. But that's the nature of how they play.
Well, I think you're going to see Westbrook dominate the ball off the, you know, with the dribble. And I think Harden's going to hoist from outside, and he's going to shoot a million threes, and he's going to, at times, dominate the ball. I think that's okay. If you're Russell Westbrook, you're at a point in your career where you got to decide, do I want to have the ball in my hand all the time and never win a championship, or do I want to split the duties here?
That's a fair question.
I got those guys second.
That's a fair question.
I got them ahead of LeBron and Davis. Possibly, I'm overlooking LeBron because of his age at 34 and just thinking he's going to slow down. Because he's been the best player on the world for the last 10 years, and he's the second best player I've ever seen other than Jordan at this point.
I just think he was look, what happened last year you have to throw out. I can't believe for a minute that we're going to get that again in the upcoming season. I just don't believe it. I think it's going to be a much more engaged LeBron.
It's not like last
LeBron
year was bad,
James.
By the way.
Individually, his play was not.
Right.
Individually, his play was fine. Now you're going to put him with Anthony Davis, and I also think you're seeing continued – look, the one guy they held on to in all those trades was Kyle Kuzma. And I think Kyle Kuzma is a fantastic young talent. So an engaged LeBron who knows he's got to step it up because of the toughness of the West – having those pieces around him now, I think he'll do that. And I think an engaged LeBron is a dangerous LeBron.
1 hour to go on Grant and Danny with Pete hanging out today. Danny's at the beach. At 118, as we've started doing this week, 20-20, Redskins questions as we count down to preseason game one. Today we'll be looking at the wide receiver position. Next, though, Craig Heist covers just about every single game the Nats and the Orioles play. Combined, he'll cover about 155 games for the two teams. Nobody in this area sees more of these two clubs than he does. He's a good source, I think, to talk about the relationship between Orioles fans and Nats fans. We'll have him on next.
Spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.